Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/ontheclock. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/ontheclock.
Are we ready?
Oh, yeah!
Time to get this party started.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
You're on the clock with Matt Geiger, only on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in again. Today, we are debating the MVP candidates. We are going to take a look at the Week 13 schedule. We have some injuries, news, and notes to go over, as well as our Week 13 picks. My name is Matt Geiger. Joining me, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Iron Mike.
Thank you. You're far too kind.
First of all, I want to apologize to a ton of people because I took a while to set up the DraftKings lobby. So if you guys missed out, we're going to be doing it again this week. It'll be up by the time the podcast comes out.
Let's go to 60.
You want to try? You want to shoot for 60?
I want to shoot for 60.
More money, more problems?
Yes.
All right. We're going to start off with some news, notes, and injuries today. Starting off in Arizona, where two running backs are hurt. Chris Johnson is out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured tibia, and Andre Ellington has turf toe. He should probably miss at least this week.
That's big for Arizona.
Yeah, they're going to be
Chris Johnson.
If both of them are hurt, they're starting David Johnson
against St. Louis, who's pretty stymie against the rush.
Pretty
stymie.
Devonta Freeman will play this week. Finally cleared off of concussion protocol. Big hit to the Buffalo Bills. Kyle Williams, their defensive tackle, is out for the season with, I think it was a knee injury. They didn't say the severity of or what exactly it was.
He's been out for a while, though. They've been playing without him.
Yeah. Also, the Bills running back, Carlos Williams, was seen in a sling after practice. He sustained a shoulder injury. His status is unknown. Defensive lineman out of Carolina, Frank Alexander, suspended 1 year for violation of the substance abuse policy. Cincinnati tight end Tyler Eifert is day-to-day with a neck injury. Heading out to Cleveland, Josh McCown may have a broken clavicle. This is important because now the Browns are stuck in another rut. They have to decide whether or not to keep Manziel on the bench or play him.
Yeah, after last week, you know, us saying Manziel was the man going forward, and then they turn around the next day and move him third on the depth chart. And now there's a possibility that he plays again. They also have Austin Davis as another quarterback on that depth chart. So it's interesting to see what Cleveland does in the next few days, you know, with McCown's injury.
What's your gut feeling on that?
My gut feeling is that they stick to their guns and they play Austin Davis. The only question is, how long has Austin Davis been on that roster? Does he know the playbook well enough?
He's been there for a while now because when McCown originally got hurt, they brought him in. It's not like he's only been there for a week or two. He's been there for a few weeks. More quarterback news. Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo is out for the rest of the season with a fractured collarbone. It's a hairline fracture, which I guess is worse.
Yeah, I think a hairline's like a full break.
Yeah, it's like through and through.
Yeah.
He's already missed time, but he's out for the year now. This is going to hurt Dez a lot. It's going to hurt their whole offense.
It hurt their whole offense for 7 weeks.
Yeah.
They didn't win a game.
Now they're definitely out of the playoff hopes. Indianapolis running back Ahmad Bradshaw is out for the season with a wrist injury. Let's see. Who else do we got here?
Alan Hearns,
the wide receiver from the Jacksonville Jaguars, suffered a concussion. Luckily, that's all that it was because he was carted off the field and taken to the hospital. So
it looked ugly.
Chiefs.
He didn't get touched. He didn't get tackled. He just fell on his head.
His head?
No, he fell on his head. Like,
yeesh.
Like he was diving into a pool.
Chiefs outside linebacker Justin Houston has a sprained PCL.
Which we learned today is in your knee.
That would be his knee. Also, left tackle Eric Fisher.
Off topic a little bit. Did you hear the new Hanukkah song?
No.
Number 4.
Adam Sandler?
Yeah, he released it the other day, I think. It's good. You should listen to it.
All right.
Go on, Fisher.
Left tackle Eric Fisher from the Chiefs has a neck injury. His status is uncertain. Which Matthews is that?
That's Rishard Matthews.
Rishard Matthews, wide receiver from the Dolphins, has multiple fractured ribs. He's out indefinitely.
Good.
In what might be the biggest news of this week, Rob Gronkowski left the game with a knee injury. There's no tear. It might just be a sprain. But New England's in the position now where, with only a few games left and, you know, the possibility of them clinching the division soon, he might not have to play until the playoffs.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the case. I think they get him back on the field ASAP.
They need
receivers. They don't have any guys out there.
Since we're talking about Gronk, let's get into one of those things that we wanted to talk about, because now with the Gronk injury and Amendola's status is still kind of up in the air.
He could play this week.
I would expect him to play this week, but Brady's targets are starting to grow paper thin.
If you look at the matchup, I don't see why they would rush him back, but you never know with the NFL. They're playing Philly this week. They may not need many guys to throw the ball to. Philly's not a good team.
Yeah, but Philly's got a good run defense, and the passing part of the defense is the real weakness. So to have a guy like Gronk there is a big advantage.
Oh, definitely it will, but I don't. There's a possibility he plays this week. I don't see it.
So, I mean, we were just talking about it a couple minutes ago. You're looking at, without Gronk, Scott Chandler, Brandon LaFell, Danny Amendola, and Keyshawn Martin.
Amendola might not even play.
Okay, so then, and then they cut, who is the kid? The one that muffed the punt.
I know exactly who you're talking about. They just brought him up from the practice squad last week. Chris Harper?
Yes. So, you know, who else is there, really? What are they going to do? If another guy goes down, then this offense is going to be decimated.
If his name is Tom Brady, yes. Otherwise, I think they'll be fine.
If Gronk misses multiple weeks and another guy gets hurt, I should say, because then they're really, really thin. They're going to be running two tight end sets the whole game.
Which they've done in the past.
Yeah, but it was effective because they had a criminal in Gronkowski.
I think he's innocent.
Oh, my God. No off-the-field shit. Jeff Schwartz, offensive lineman of the New York Giants, has a broken leg. He's out for the remainder of the season. Philadelphia Eagles cornerback Nolan Carroll has a broken ankle. He's out for the remainder of the season.
I mean, he wasn't good when he was on the field, but
he was the best corner they had at the time.
It further proves that New England's not going to really need much guys to make a difference this weekend.
Ben Roethlisberger, the Pittsburgh Steelers, said that he did not suffer a concussion and that he will play Week 13.
But he is going through the protocol.
Is he?
Yeah. I just read it.
Even NFL. Without a concussion?
On NFL.com. I just read it.
Okay. Second biggest
news. Because he said he didn't suffer, it doesn't mean doctors don't think that.
Second biggest news, or injury news, Jimmy Graham ruptured his patellar tendon. He's out for the remainder of the season. I mean, how big is it? I don't know, but it's a big name. He hadn't really developed much chemistry with with Russell Wilson.
He's been hot and cold all season, so
we'll see what Doug Baldwin was the one that had the big game this week.
Fuck him too.
158 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Fuck him too.
All right. We know how Iron Mike feels about Doug Baldwin. That's going to do it for injuries, news, and notes this week. What do we want to do, Mike? You want to jump into the MVP talk?
Yeah, we can do that. Let's go right into it.
All right. Well, we have a few names written down that we've kind of narrowed down to the MVP talk. I'll start off by saying all of these guys are still in heavy contention for the playoffs. They're all at the top half of the playoff seeding.
Yeah. There's no real stud player this year that's putting up a you know, eye popping out statistical line.
Right, it's not
line.
Like Drew Brees is having the career of his the game the season of his career, and you know the team's 2 and whatever the hell they are. Let's start off with Josh Norman. And when we talk MVP, it's almost obvious that a defensive guy's not going to win it. But you have to talk about Norman. 4 interceptions, 2 defensive touchdowns, 2 forced fumbles, 15 passes defended.
Yep.
I got through that one.
Yep.
And then if you look at Carolina's defense as a whole, they're only allowing 312 yards per game through the air. Or is that total yards?
That's total yards.
Jeez. That's good for 2nd in the league. And then 223 passing yards per game, which is 5th in the league. So take all that into account and then, you know, weigh how much of a difference Josh Norman makes in that defense.
Oh,
it's a huge amount.
It's huge. It's huge. I think that the only disadvantage a guy has towards the MVP race being on the defensive side of the ball is that it's more of a team effort on defense. You know, their team has been, you know, outstanding all year defensively, and he's not really in a position like a linebacker would be, like, you know, a guy like Luke Kuechly, where he helps in the passing and the running game. You know, I'm sure Norman comes up and makes a few tackles in the running game every once in a while, but he's more involved in the passing game.
The one thing I will say, though, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Norman, but the case against him, I would say, would be that he hasn't faced an elite number one receiver yet. We'll see how good he really is in the next...
He just played Dez Bryant on Thursday.
In the next 5 weeks. Yeah, but Dez... How long did Dez play without Romo?
No, you're right.
2 quarters?
You're right.
In the next 5 weeks, he plays the Saints. So he'll either get Brandon Cooks or Marcus Colston. Is Colston playing right now?
I'm not sure.
That's a wash.
You know, Cooks isn't really an elite guy.
But then he goes and he plays at the Falcons, or home against the Falcons, so you get Julio. Then he travels to MetLife to play the Giants, so he'll get Odell. Then he goes back to Atlanta to play the Falcons again, and then closes with the Buccaneers, who have Evans and Vincent Jackson. So you're really going to see how tough of a schedule, or how good of a corner he is based on the tough schedule that he's going to face. If he could shut down a guy like Julio and shut down a guy like Mike Evans and Odell, I think he could be the defensive player of the year, and there might be consideration for MVP.
Yeah, for sure. He, you know, there's a good chance he wins defensive player of the year.
Who's the next candidate that we have, Mike?
We got Adrian Peterson with 1,164 yards on the year. He's got 8 rushing touchdowns. He's got almost 22 carries a game, and he's pounding out 4.9 yards per carry. The only thing that's hurt him is fumbles in big spots. He's got 5 fumbles on the year.
He does, and the one thing that kind of popped out to me when we were looking at the stats – going into week 12, he had a 200 plus yard lead on the next.
Going into week 11, because week 11 is when Martin popped off.
Yeah.
200.
He had a 200 yard lead. No, because Martin wasn't even in the top five. It was going into week 12. Adrian Peterson had a 200 yard lead on the next closest running back to him, which at the time I think was Devonta Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's only down about 75 yards because Doug Martin had an amazing game last 2 games.
Yeah.
But listen,
Martin's got over 300 yards
Peterson
in the last 2 weeks.
Right now is the best running back in the league as far as numbers go, and not to mention his team's in the division lead. They could potentially be competing for a first-round bye, and they're doing it in a season where everybody just assumed that Green Bay would be the ones taking the reign of the division, and it's really been Peterson.
Yeah, you don't see many guys in this era carrying the ball 20-plus times a game, and he's been doing it. The next closest guy is Jonathan Stewart with 19 carries a game, but they've been pounding the ball all year, Carolina.
Yeah, and Jonathan Stewart only has 832 rushing yards.
Yeah.
So Peterson has what? 300 more yards than him? 200 more yards than him?
Yeah.
If a running back was going to win it, it would be Peterson.
The only guy with more yards per carry on the season is Doug Martin with over 5.
But Doug Martin's also missed a game or two, and he's splitting carries, so he's not getting the touches that Peterson is getting.
Yeah, Peterson's only got 35 more carries than him.
Right, but that could bring down your yards per carry a little bit.
A little bit.
All right, so we're now moving into the top.
AP is just
the quote-unquote top three. I really think it's only down to... Oh, yeah, I really think it's only down to three guys, but the fourth one that we have is Andy Dalton. He has almost 3,000 passing yards, three quarters of the way through the year. 23 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That's good for 105.3 passer rating, and he's leading a 9-2 team.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because last season, and you know, looking back, Dalton was the comparison of is your team's quarterback mediocre? You would compare them to Dalton. Now he's in an MVP candidate discussion. Even if he's not going to win it, he's still in the discussion. He essentially been doing it lately without a running game.
Yeah, their running game kind of disappeared over the last few weeks.
You know, and then in the passing game, the emergence of Tyler Eifert, who's been healthy all year up until this week, where he banged up his neck. But he has a full, healthy offense right now. You know, the running game is healthy. They're not doing much, but they're healthy.
And that's something we've been saying all year.
Eifert hasn't been injured. Marvin Jones hasn't been injured. Mohamed Sanu's there. And obviously A.J. Green, who had a huge game this week, is there. You know, Dalton's one of those guys that as much as you hate to talk about him, he has to be considered.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the two guys in the backfield to help balance out the, you know, passing and rushing attack. Between the two of them, they have right around 1,000 yards on the season. So you put the two of them together and they're number third overall in rushing yardage. But like we've been saying, they've been healthy all season, and this is the result of it. You get a good quarterback play. In past years, you've seen poor play from Dalton.
Next up, we have Cam Newton, and I think he finishes in third just because of the lack of touchdown passes. And I mean, granted, he doesn't have the weapons, and he's 11-0. This is a pretty impressive year for him. 2,500 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 89.5 passer rating. That's where he's really going to get killed. But the team's 11-0. He's doing it without his best receiver. Greg Olsen's essentially the number one now. Devin Funchess is just starting to pick up. And you're throwing at guys like Philly Brown, Jericho Cotchery.
You know? I think the real reason, you know, the passing numbers don't really pop out at you. The real reason he's in the MVP talk,
you have
is
to talk
because,
about his rushing numbers,
yes,
as well.
Because he can throw the ball and he can run the ball. He's got 420 rushing yards on the year, and he's got 7 touchdowns.
So he has 7 rushing touchdowns?
7 rushing touchdowns.
So that puts him at 27 touchdowns to 9 interceptions, which is identical to Carson Palmer, but he's still down about 1,000 passing yards. But then you add in the rushing yards to that, and he's right up in the conversation. So he's affecting the game the same way guys like Dalton and Palmer and Brady are. He's just doing it in different ways.
Obviously, yeah, he's got that team 11-0. Whether it's, you know, because of the defense or because of him, that they're winning. And usually, you know, win loss records are put on the quarterback.
Yeah, and
even though it's a team sport.
And you know, we are talking MVP talk, but it should be the quarterback of the year, you know, because when was the last time a defensive player won the MVP?
Couldn't tell you.
I think it might have been Ray Lewis.
It's, yeah, back in what, like 2000,
something like that.
It's usually a quarterback, and
it's because it's a quarterback driven league.
Yeah.
Coming in for us at number two, Carson Palmer, who's been very impressive, and he might be having his best year as a professional quarterback, and that's coming off of a year where he tore his ACL.
Yeah.
I think it's something in the water in Arizona where old guys go there and resurface their careers.
He's always thrown for a lot of yards in his career, but now you're seeing, you know, different things popping out. You know, touchdown to interception ratio is good.
Right. He's got a 27 touchdowns to 9 interceptions.
It is 3-1.
105.9 passer rating, and they're 9-2. And if you would have looked at this division earlier, you know, at the beginning of the year, like I did, you would have thought it would have been a lot more competitive, and Arizona ran away with it already. They still have some division games left, but for them to be 9-2 at this point in the year is really impressive.
Palmer, over his career, has topped 4,000 yards 4 times, and he's well on pace to do it again this year. He'll probably finish with closer to 4,500 yards, which would be his best in his career.
They are 4th in the league in passing yards per game. They're 12th in the league in rushing yards per game, which has nothing to do with Carson Palmer, although he did have a rushing touchdown yesterday. Did you see the spike? Or Sunday, did you see the spike?
Nope.
It's pretty cool. It might have been his first rushing touchdown ever.
And he's going to pass his highest career touchdown mark, too, as long as he stays on the field,
now,
which was 32.
The thing that might help him is
Bruce Arians.
They play the Rams this week. Then they go to play the Vikings, which could be a tough game. But then they play the Eagles, the Packers, and the Seahawks, who have been struggling a little bit against the pass. So if he keeps the consistency up, not only is the team going to keep winning, but he can make a great case for himself to maybe jump our number one.
There's a good possibility that they don't win again, but I see him finishing 13-3. I mean, that they don't lose again. I see him finishing 13-3 on the year.
Listen, St. Louis always plays them good.
Yeah,
and
they beat them earlier.
The divisional games are always good. So playing Seattle, they have a tough road to the end of the season, but
they're a good team. They're a really good team.
Yeah. But like I said, Palmer could build a case to jump number one, and our number one in the MVP talk is Tom Brady. And how could he not be? You know, this offense has gone through a lot of adversity this year.
I think that part of the reason we think Palmer can jump to number one is because of who the number one is right now and what he doesn't have right now.
Right. We're not, instead of looking at what he's already done, we're looking at how things could change.
You might see a decline in Brady's numbers over the next couple of weeks.
Right. And the decline, like we said earlier when we were talking about Gronk's injury, is going to come because if Gronk does miss games, the weapons aren't what Brady's used to having in recent years.
No, but if you look at what Brady's had in recent years and in the past, and it's never really, like, the most prolific guy he's ever had is Randy Moss. And then after that, it's literally nobody.
Yeah, but in the seasons where, like, Gronk's been injured, he's had Aaron Hernandez, you know? He's had a reliable guy. He's had Wes Welker.
I think Aaron Hernandez, yeah, but Wes Welker is Wes Welker because of Tom Brady.
Listen, that's true, but he's still a guy who he relied on. He's not, I mean, so
Aaron Hernandez is Aaron Hernandez because of Tom Brady.
There was a time where where Gronkowski was hurt. They had Aaron Hernandez, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, and Brandon LaFell.
And Julian Edelman is Julian Edelman because of Tom Brady.
But what I'm saying is they actually have less than what they had when the last time Gronk missed time.
No, I agree 100%. You know what I
mean? They have Amendola, Brandon LaFell, and Keyshawn Martin.
By the end of this season, we could be saying, oh, Keyshawn Martin, good receiver. Why? Because of Tom Brady.
I'm not taking anything away from him. I just think you could see a decline in the numbers.
Oh, you're going to see a decline.
They already lost. Once Gronk came off the field, the game really changed for them.
The one thing you won't see a decline in is the touchdown to interception ratio.
Right. Just to go over his stats, Brady has 3,600 passing yards. I think that's first in the league. I actually might not be.
Rivers might have him.
Yeah, but he also has 28 touchdowns to just 4 interceptions. That's good for...
that's tops in the league.
Jeez. 106.7 passer rating. That's good for first in the league. And they're 10-1. And the reason they're 10-1 is all on Brady. The one loss is because of the defense. You know what I mean?
Defense, weather, officiating.
Brock Osweiler swing passes in overtime. It's Brady's team, and as long as he keeps playing like this, he's gonna find ways to get them wins, and he's gonna be at the top of the MVP discussion, I just want to look at one thing.
Going back to, you know, prolific players, Randy Moss was Randy Moss before Tom Brady. Rob Gronkowski, if he goes to another team, is he going to be who he is now? Probably, yeah, because he's a freak athlete. But most of these guys that are on the Patriots, they go to another team and they're nobodies. Who was the one MVP the 1 year? Deion Branch, right? Deion Branch won the Super Bowl MVP 1 year. And then he goes to Seattle and he's nothing.
He had decent years in Seattle.
He had decent, no.
Yeah.
Not compared to what he had in New England.
Well, it's a different kind of offense.
I agree. But Tom Brady makes players who he is. He can take Raritan High School wide receivers this week and make them look like pros, as long as they catch the ball.
Yeah, no, I lied about that.
His I know
best,
you lied about it.
His best year was 725 yards. And then when he was in New England, no, I mean, listen, it's not that different.
When he was in New England, okay,
he had his best year.
900 yards, okay, 5 touchdowns. Then he left, went to Seattle, then he came back with New England, and he had more yards these 2 years in 2010, 2011 each year than he did with his 2 years in Seattle.
I'm just I think you're taking too much away from some of these other guys. I'm not arguing that Brady isn't making all these guys better. I'm just saying that, you know, a guy like Keyshawn Martin hadn't done dick, and then he comes in, you know, you can't say the only reason he's doing anything is because of Brady, because he still had to find his way onto the team.
Oh, no, listen, I'm not disagreeing with that, but Tom Brady takes these guys to the next level. You look at Wes Welker when he was in Miami. Yeah, he was a return specialist. He had a few plays here and there as a slot guy, but then he goes to New England, and he's a superstar. Then he goes to Denver, and he's got a half of a solid year with Peyton Manning, who is right there with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I guess we could debate about this another time, but I guess that's going to do it for the MVP talk. We're both in consensus that, as of right now, Brady would be the MVP. So,
politics as well.
Right.
You got to factor in politics.
Yeah. But if you want to factor in politics, does the NFL really want Brady to win the MVP? After the whole Deflategate situation?
True.
You know what I mean?
True.
So
he's gonna play to a level for the rest of the season, no matter who he has on the field with him, to where they're not gonna have a choice.
Yeah. All right. So
he might break 5,000 yards this year.
We just want to thank Mike Canizzaro for the idea for the MVP debate, and also we want to say thanks to my little brother Mark for getting us a ton of mailbag questions this week, which we'll get to you
right now. Let's do it right now.
Well, I think we're going to pay the bills first, so we'll do the mailbag when we come back after our commercial. Hey, everybody. If you like what you're hearing, then make sure you guys show us some love. The next time you're going to buy something on Amazon, before you do, go to our website at ontheclockpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner. It doesn't cost you guys anything, but we get credit for the referral, and it helps us keep the show on the air. It's the perfect time to do it. Christmas is right around the corner. Everybody's shopping. I know Iron Mike's been doing it. Before you buy anything on Amazon, just go to the website, ontheclockpodcast.com, and click the Amazon.com banner.
And before you go to the stores and wait in line and wait in traffic all day, shop online.
Yeah.
Go to ontheclockpodcast.com, click the Amazon banner.
Sign up for Prime. You get the stuff in 2 days. I ordered a luchador mask. It'll be at my house tomorrow. It's going to be great. You're going to get whatever you want. You're going to help us out. And you don't, like Mike said, you don't have to wait online for anything. So go to ontheclockpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner. All right, so for everybody that's listening to the On the Clock podcast, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. They have 180,000 books to choose from. That's 180,000. You could read one book a day and still not be done by the time you're dead. All right. If you guys like The Hobbit, or if you haven't read The Hobbit, you can get that. It's about Bilbo Baggins, a little hobbit guy, right? He joins a wizard's band of homeless dwarves in search of giant spiders, savage wolves, and other dangers. So, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff, I don't know if Iron Mike is, but I am. I've never read The Hobbit. I'm going to use my 30-day free trial from the On The Clock podcast to go read The Hobbit. Once again, go to audibletrial.com/ontheclock for your 30-day free trial and free audiobook download. That's audibletrial.com/ontheclock. All right, we're back. Thanks for listening to us pay our bills. Where are we going, Mike? Let's go with some week 12 pick or week 13 picks.
No. I thought we were doing the mailbag.
Oh, yeah. Let's do the mailbag.
Let's do the mailbag.
Mailbag. Let me pull it up.
We got a lot of questions this week.
We do. First question comes from Mikey Mendez. He wants to know when the Rams fired Jeff Fisher, who should they go after, and who is most likely the head coach that will sign with them? There's a couple of names that have been popping up. There's the usuals. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, who I don't know if he would leave or not, just because of the success he's had in New England since he's left the head coaching job in Denver. There's a few names. Bill Cowher might be a good fit. He's talked about possibly coming back to coaching after working as an analyst for a little bit. Mike, would anybody want this team?
I don't think so. It's tough when, you know, like you were saying all season, when the guy you're working for, you know, the owner, is a dick.
Yeah. I mean, Stan Kroenke's not the ideal owner to be working for. I'm just trying to see if there's any other big names.
That and you, it's a big project.
Yeah.
It's a very big project, you know. They have a pretty good defense and young players on offense, but...
Some other names to keep in mind. Adam Gase, the offensive coordinator for the Bears. He's building a good case for him right now. He kind of put a little bit of life back into Jay Cutler's career. He took a rookie running back and made him relevant, you know, in Jeremy Langford. Jim Mora, the head coach for the UCLA Bruins. Pep Hamilton, the Colts offensive coordinator, is going to be highly touted after, even though the offense hasn't seen much success this year. David Shaw from Stanford. Joe Lombardi, the Lions offensive coordinator, or ex-offensive coordinator. Kyle Shanahan, the Falcons offensive coordinator. There's a bunch of guys. Jim Schwartz is a free agent. Eric Mangini could become another offensive coach again. Mike Shanahan's out there.
Mangini wouldn't be bad. He's good. He's good with finding players too.
He's a good scout. He's good at finding guys to fit his system. Thanks for the question, Mike. Next question comes from our buddy Troy Parrish. He wants to know how we feel about the Chiefs staying in playoff contention.
The way they've been playing the last 4 or 5 weeks is excellent. So, I mean, they're probably not going to win the division, but they have a good chance at a wild card spot. The only problem is there's a lot of teams with a good chance to get a wild card spot in the AFC.
So their remaining five, they play three in division. This week at Oakland, then they play at home against the Chargers, at Baltimore, they play the Browns, and then they close at home against the Raiders. These are all winnable games for the Chiefs right now.
They are all winnable games. The big disadvantage I see is that they don't play Denver again, which is the AFC West leading team. That would help if they did play Denver, but they don't. A positive I see is that they're all AFC conference games, and that's one of the tiebreakers. What's their conference record right now?
Pulling it up right now. Conference they are 5-2 in the
five
conference.
5-2, and they have all their remaining games, their conference games.
And they're 2-1 in the division, and they still have three division games left. So As far as the playoffs go, they are currently sitting as the first wild card. So if they keep winning, they're going to secure that wild card spot. They're going to control their own destiny. Yes. I think they have a pretty good shot. And I'm not just saying that because I picked them to win division in the beginning of the year.
A big thing is going to watch for is going to be Justin Houston and his, you know, health, because he's the leader of that defense. Statistically, he's an animal.
All right. So
the next question is from Michael Geiger. Where are you doing this podcast? Well, Dad, it's in my house.
Well, you just blew the cover on everything.
Ah, fuck. Delete that. Start over. Just don't. Nope. Just don't include that. Fuck.
Maybe nobody will recognize it. Party with Mark G wants to know why the refs blow every game.
We don't really have an answer, but it's been poor officiating all year.
Do you want my answer? My answer is because of...
I can't believe I did that.
Because of the replays, because of the way that the challenging system is and the booth reviews and things of that nature, there's less room for error because most things now can be reviewed by the booth and overturned and changed, right? The refs that are on the field are just there to fuck shit up. You know, if they blow their whistle prematurely, then the play is dead. If they rule a catch a drop, then it's dead. It can't be reversed. If a fumble is ruled a fumble on the field, it can only be reversed by a booth challenge.
I think that with the replays being such a big involvement, if anything, you would think that it leaves less room for error for the officiating. Because they can just let something play out,
right,
and
but they don't,
then challenge it.
But they don't. It's because they have the whistle. Once the whistle is blown, the play is blown dead. You know what I mean? So that leads to a lot of things not being reviewable. Because, like I said, once the whistle is blown dead, you can't go back and change the outcome of certain things. Which has led to a lot of shit. Not to mention, they're throwing bad penalty flags, which is leading to, you know, yards lost for offenses.
Yeah.
Or yards gained for offenses.
Yeah.
The next question is from Guy Palumbo. He wants to know who will win the NFC East. And Mike's going to say the Giants, I'm going to say the Eagles.
Nah, I think the Eagles are a bad team.
I think that as bad as they are, they're still not firing on all cylinders. They're still trying to figure it out. Now they're going to have to decide whether or not to play Sanchez or Bradford. Neither one has played, you know, necessarily good football.
No. Because they're not a good team in my eyes.
I mean, let's look at the remaining schedules and see.
Right now, the Redskins hold the tiebreaker over the Giants. They're both 5-6. But I still think that when push comes to shove, Eli steps up in big games. I mean, he didn't last week, but a couple of those interceptions were drop balls that happened to be unlucky and popped right in the air instead of down onto the ground.
All right, so the Giants are 5-6. They play the Jets.
Win.
So that's 6-6. They play the Dolphins.
Win.
7-6. They play the Panthers.
Loss.
7-7. They play the Vikings.
Loss.
7-8. They play the Eagles.
Win.
8-8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is right around where I had them all season. 8-8, 9-7.
So now let's go look at Philly. And first of all, if they win the division at 8-8, it's a pathetic division.
But that's been the picture all year. It's a bad division.
No, you're right.
And that's what it's been over the last few years. 9-17 wins the NFC East.
So the Eagles are 4-7. Okay, they play the Patriots.
Loss.
4-8. They play the Bills.
Loss.
4-9.
That puts them out of it.
Cardinals puts them at 4-10, Redskins 5-10, Giants 5-11.
Very possible 5-11. Maybe 6-10.
It's gonna take a lot for them to get it.
I don't think they win it.
They have a tough schedule to end the year. If we're looking just on the schedule, I would say yeah, the Giants are gonna win it. And then
look
there's
at Washington's
no playoff
schedule.
Team.
Look at Washington's schedule.
There's no team in
the
wild card.
We could almost figure this out right now. I mean, obviously, it's any given Sunday. You look at the Giants against the Patriots. Yeah, they lost, but they looked like a good team. And then
Washington, Dallas.
Washington?
6-6. Washington, Chicago. In Chicago.
I'd like to see what the Bears do this weekend, but I'm going to say
6-7.
I'm going to say the Bears win that game.
Bills.
I think the Bills win.
6-8. Eagles.
Washington.
7-8. And then the Cowboys, 8-8.
If they finish tied with the Giants, they win because
they win head-to-head.
Because of the tiebreaker.
And the division record. So it's going to be tough, but the race from where we're looking at it right now is going to lie between the Redskins and the Giants. So,
yeah.
Thanks for the question. Next question comes from Mark G. He wants to know if Odell Beckham is the best receiver in the league. Are you retarded? Not a chance.
No, I don't think so.
Antonio Brown's better.
Yeah, he hasn't put up the numbers really to prove it. Julio Jones is better.
DeAndre Hopkins is better.
DeAndre Hopkins might be the best receiver in the NFL.
This year.
This year.
Okay, so I would put Beckham 4 or 5.
Probably. I don't have stats in front of me right now, but I don't think Beckham is there yet. I think he's got potential.
He has the most potential out of any receiver in the league right now.
Hopkins is probably the most potential. He's a bigger physical receiver. Right.
But it would be a no-brainer that Hopkins has the most potential or is one of the better receivers if he had a reliable quarterback or even a quarterback that was playing at the caliber of Eli.
Or a steady quarterback for an entire season.
Yeah, I mean, I would put him up there at 5. I would say Julio, Antonio, Hopkins, and maybe 4 with Odell Beckham in the argument with Brandon Marshall, Calvin, Demarius, AJ Green.
Yeah.
But you have to give him the edge because of the numbers he has right now.
Yeah. He's a good receiver. He's not the best.
All right. The next 12 questions come from Mike T, who's our favorite bartender over at the Park Tap and Grill. Make sure you guys go hang out with him. He's there
9 days a week.
Yeah. He's there for every Broncos game. He's there for every Met game. He's there for every Rangers game. He'll take care of you guys when you go over there. He'll make sure you guys have a good time. He wants to know, realistically, can the Broncos win a Super Bowl? And I guess realistically, he's talking about, you know, with the absence of Peyton Manning and the emergence of Brock Osweiler.
Realistically, there's about, right now, 16 teams that can win a Super Bowl. Football is the hardest to predict.
Right, but let's just say for...
on a game-to-game basis, because any given Sunday, you know, you look... I'm going to go back to it again. You look at the Giants, yeah, they lost, but they looked like a good team against New England. They looked like a good team offensively against New Orleans, and then they come out last week, and they look like hot garbage versus the Redskins, who have been playing well lately, but it's any given Sunday in the NFL.
Right. Look how they beat New England.
Sounds cliche with the title of the movie, Jamie Foxx, but it is any given Sunday. Any team can come out any Sunday, any Thursday, any Monday, whatever you want to look at it as, and
so
they can win.
Let's just look at starting. So what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The top 6 teams. Minnesota, Denver, Arizona, Cincinnati, New England, and Carolina. Out of those 6 teams, take Denver compared to all those teams, I think that Denver has a legit shot of beating Minnesota. They have a legit shot of beating Cincinnati, and they have beat New England, but that could work differently next time because it took them overtime to do it. I would put them at, let's say Carolina has a 40% chance, New England has a 30% chance to win the Super Bowl.
I look at them as...
Or 40-40.
I look at them as 1A and 1B.
Okay, so 30 and 30% chance each to win the Super Bowl. There's 40% left. I would put 15% for Denver that they have...
You know what? I mean, this is going to sound like me picking on the Broncos again and saying that I haven't liked them all year, but I look at that win Sunday night as kind of fluky. You know, it's snowing. yes, they had the home field advantage, right?
Yeah, but now, for instance, if you go to Gillette Stadium and it's snowing, then they're in the same boat.
But New England has been beaten before in the playoffs at home. It's happened. Baltimore's done it two times. But that's what I'm saying.
Like, it can be done. It's not like, you know, it's not like New England's untouchable.
Any given Sunday.
And we don't know if Carolina could play cold weather games in the playoffs because they haven't made it that deep into the playoffs, you know, since Jake DeLone was a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all circumstantial.
Well, they made it to the NFC Championship against Seattle, right?
Oh, yeah, 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 you're right. But it's all circumstantial if you think about it.
And then they got destroyed. The final score looked close, but they got destroyed.
But like I'm saying, it's all circumstantial because they could wind up with the easiest path to the Super Bowl out of any team. You know what I mean? And then they're in the Super Bowl. So let's see what else do we got. Is Brock Osweiler going to start when Peyton Manning is healthy?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I think if they keep on a hot streak and they're winning games that they have to leave him in.
I don't.
With the way Peyton Manning has played all season.
One of the things that stood out for me with Denver winning that game was the touchdown to Andre Caldwell. He has a good rapport with these guys from playing with the second string offense, you know, practicing every day. He was able to throw that ball outside and it had perfect timing because they've been having the perfect timing all year. But he doesn't have the timing down with the stars of this team, Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. You look at Demaryius Thomas, he didn't have a catch until the fourth quarter. You're not going to win games on a week-to-week basis with Demaryius Thomas not having catches.
Well, he also dropped a ton.
Yeah, he dropped a ton, but because it was snowing. How often are games played in the snow?
Not too often, but it's not fluky. It's not uncommon for Demaryius Thomas to drop passes because he was doing that with Peyton Manning at quarterback. So sticking to the Brock Osweiler conversation, he wants to know, will Brock Osweiler be an elite quarterback at some time in his career? The answer is no.
Probably not.
Listen, elite quarterbacks only come around once every few years. I wouldn't even... Cam Newton is a unique talent. I would not call him an elite quarterback.
No, because he's not...
So is he better than Cam Newton? Absolutely not.
He's not a full-bred quarterback. He's a hybrid quarterback.
But what I'm saying is, you know, just... He plays the position, so you have to consider Cam Newton as an above-average quarterback.
I think that once Brady, Manning, Breeze, and in a few years, Rodgers, when they're gone, it might be a while before we see another quote-unquote elite quarterback.
Right, because if you look at the young quarterbacks in the league right now, you got
Carr,
Bortles,
Wilson.
Tannehill, Russell Wilson, Andy Dalton.
You know, a couple of years back, Matt Ryan was considered an elite quarterback, and he's not now.
Right, but that could turn around next year.
It could, but I don't see it happening.
But Matt Ryan is still on pace to break the all-time passing yards record. Stafford.
I think that with the situation that Atlanta's in right now, with Dan Quinn as the head coach, them leaning more towards being a defensive team in the future.
It's going to take its toll on Ryan's
stats. Yeah, he's going to be more of a game manager than, you know, the star quarterback.
To answer the question, Osweiler will be a serviceable quarterback in the league. He's not going to be elite.
Yeah, but how do you not, like, you're running off of a two-game sample size. Before this, he's never seen real NFL time, and in 2-3 weeks, he might not see real NFL time. Next season, that staff could say, let's go out and sign a quarterback because Brock Osweiler might not be an NFL quarterback.
Oh, no, absolutely. But this is what's going to be dictated throughout the rest of the season.
One of the guys on the Sunday night broadcast said that, you know, maybe Elway brought him in because he saw a bit of Osweiler in him.
He saw a little bit of himself in Osweiler?
Yeah, whatever. Good for him. But that doesn't mean he's an NFL quarterback.
No, I agree. So, you see size and you see something that you work with. Did you read that?
Yeah, I read that.
All right, so the next question is, why has the Denver rushing attack gotten back on track? The reason behind that, I think, is, first of all, the play calling is being dictated differently without Peyton Manning in the game.
Yes.
Second of all, they've made adjustments to figure out what was wrong and how to fix it moving forward. Third of all, if Peyton Manning's not under center, there's not the audible at the line of scrimmage based on what Peyton Manning sees. And looking at this year, it might not necessarily have been the right calls all the time.
Yes.
So instead of Peyton Manning walking up to the line of scrimmage, you know, finding the Mike linebacker, the coverage, making all the changes, now they're giving Brock Osweiler, if not one play, at the most 2 to 3, and having him look and make a run or pass call based on the coverage. It's not check out of a run into a pass and then start calling the routes out, or, you know, check out of a pass to a run and call the run, you know, the blocking schemes and, you know, realigning things. It's they're keeping it very simple for Brock Osweiler because he's such a young quarterback.
In my opinion, you look at the Denver offensive line in the beginning of the year, and it was awful. You lost key guys, and when you're that bad, the only way you can go is up. You can only get better. And you saw C.J. Anderson emerge out of nowhere in the second half last year, and that's kind of what you're seeing this year. You're seeing him slowly emerging into a better running back as the season progresses, and part of that has to do with the offensive line only being able to get better. They can't get worse.
Right. Thank God C.J. Anderson's doing better, because I was trying to pawn him off all season in fantasy football.
And you weren't able to do it because he was bad.
Yeah.
I tried.
And people were asking for...
I tried to get him.
People were asking for my right arm to get Hillman as a handcuff.
I wanted your left.
I do a lot of stuff with my left hand.
I could have used a good left hand because I'm righty.
All right. Can Denver go into New England in the playoffs and win a road game? I don't think so. Not if Osweiler is quarterback, and not if Peyton Manning's playing the way he was at the beginning of the year.
Any given Sunday.
New England's defense plays better at home. So I think that would have a big factor.
Any given Sunday.
Finally.
If the game's on a Saturday, New England's got it.
But will Peyton play next year? If so, where? I think it depends on his health. If he's healthy and he could show them before the offseason starts that he could throw the ball around and still produce, they'll try to give him another chance. Denver will, at least. If not...
Under contract with Denver for another year?
Yeah, and he has a no-trade clause. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. If they move him, a team's going to have to inherit $22 million or $25 million, something like that.
Yeah, but he can always take a cut because, you know.
He's not going to take a cut to go anywhere else.
Yeah, he would. If it relies on his pride and whatnot and his name going out like this. He might take a pay cut to prove a point and go to a different team.
All right, so just look at this. Look at the teams that are on paper right in front of us.
San Fran.
He would go to San Fran.
Maybe.
With those targets?
Maybe. They might fire Tom Sula, and they might bring in somebody
Kaepernick's
else.
Kaepernick's gone next year.
Kaepernick will be gone. They might bring in somebody else that might intrigue Manning.
For him to take a pay cut, it would have to be somewhere where he would want to play. Otherwise, he's not going to take the pay cut.
Oh, absolutely. I agree, but... Who knows where he wants to play? When he was a free agent after leaving Indy, did anybody ever think, Denver Broncos? No, everybody was thinking Miami. And that didn't happen. Nobody thought the Denver Broncos would sign him.
What about Buffalo? Decent receivers, good run game. Sammy Watkins is there.
Nah.
Reliable tight end.
Nah. I don't think at his age. I don't think at his age, and again, we go back to when the last time he was a free agent. I don't think at his age he can go into another cold weather city. And that's what everybody thought last time. Everybody thought, oh, Miami, it's nice and warm down there. He won't have to play in the cold anymore.
Houston?
Houston's, listen, anything can happen. Anything can happen. I don't know. I don't know if he plays next year.
To try to speculate where he's going to wind up is hard to say.
You gotta watch the rest of the season and see how it plays out.
Do we want to read this garbage?
Who put the fucking paper on your car? We know it was you, Ray.
Ray, I've known for like 3 months. I just played along with it because I thought it was funny to watch you think I didn't know.
Yeah, shut up. Good luck making the playoffs.
He also wants to know why Mike is so scared of him in the Madden franchise. He was so scared that he had to switch teams when he was supposed to play Ray.
False. I just didn't want to play with Seattle. All
right, and he wants to know if Oakland the Raiders, NFL baby. Should continue to expand but put the Gamecocks in.
No, the Gamecocks need to stay in Tab Ramos until 2016 when the Cockbeaters make their debut.
This is the most boring thing we've ever done on the show. We've talked about punters, and this is more boring than that.
Well, Ray likes to make himself the center of attention.
Well, guess what? If Ray sends another question, we're not answering it ever again. All right, real quick, let's go through our week 13 picks.
All right. Week 13 starts off with Thursday Night Football, Green Bay at Detroit.
I'll take Detroit.
I'm going to go with Green Bay.
I like Detroit the way Detroit won earlier in the I like the way they look playing on Thanksgiving.
They were playing the Eagles. The Eagles are awful. They might be the worst team in the NFL. All
right. Well, you get another game on me.
Hopefully. Sunday, 1 o'clock, the Jets at the Giants.
The Battle of the Swamp. I'll take the Giants.
I'm also going to take the Giants. Jets looked good last week, but it was against the Dolphins. I like the Giants in this one. I think
they look good up until the end of the game.
I think the last time the Jets beat the Giants, Boomer Esiason was their quarterback.
All right, yeah, I mean, I'm going to take the Giants just because of the idea of, you know, the Jets' secondary has been banged up for a while. They've been giving up a decent chunk of passing
Reeves'
yards.
Status is still uncertain. He's still in the first stage of the concussion protocol.
Yeah, and even if it comes down to...
You really think Antonio Cromartie is going to be able to cover
exactly.
Beckham?
Right. All right, next game.
Arizona at St. Louis.
I'm going to take Arizona.
Yeah, me too. Arizona's a really good football team.
St. Louis's offense doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Not even Todd Gurley.
Nope.
No more analysis after that.
Atlanta at Tampa Bay.
Gee, you would have asked me 5 weeks ago. I definitely would have took Atlanta.
It's a shame Tampa Bay couldn't come out of that game last week with a win because they were hot going in.
I'll take Atlanta.
I'm going to take Tampa Bay.
I like the way Tampa Bay's been playing, but Atlanta has to secure themselves a playoff spot. So this is a good game to do that.
You would think. Next up is Seattle at Minnesota.
Yep, I'll do it too. We're both taking Minnesota. Seattle was impressive, but I really like Minnesota's team.
With the exception of the Green Bay game, Minnesota hasn't lost at home this year.
Rawls looks good too. I have to give it to him. But they just lost Graham, so that makes them a little more one-dimensional.
Yeah, Minnesota's 4-1 at home. 4-2 on the road. I like Minnesota. Next game is the 49ers at the Bears.
I'll take Chicago. I don't think San Fran should be in the league right now. It looks like they could barely compete in the Big 12.
I like Chicago. San Fran's just not a good team.
There's no way that San Fran should have won any games with Blaine Gabbert as their quarterback. Plain and simple. And I don't think they could beat Chicago, especially...
Chicago's defense is good.
They've been very good lately, and the offense isn't bad either.
They held down
Two healthy, valuable running backs. Alshon Jeffrey's getting healthier. Martellus Bennett should play this week. Marquise Wilson is showing that he can be reliable as, you know, a third option. So how do you not take Chicago?
Hopefully Forte bounces back this week. Next game is the Jaguars and the Titans.
Jacksonville seems to be struggling a little bit lately, but I still think that they're a better team than Tennessee.
I'm going to take Tennessee just off of a hunch and try and catch up to Matt in the standings. You got anything else to say on that game?
Nope.
All right. Houston Texans at the Buffalo Bills.
You got a quarter?
That's pretty much what it is here. Both teams are... Nope, that's a lie. Houston 6-5, Buffalo's 5-6, but Matt's going to the coin on this one.
Heads Houston, tails Buffalo. I'll take Buffalo.
Matt's taking Buffalo. That doesn't change my pick at all. I was going to take Houston the whole way. I think Houston, as pitiful as their running game is, I think they figure out something, especially with Kyle Williams being out this game and for the rest of the season, and they're a good passing team.
All right.
Next up is the Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins.
I'm going to take Miami. Baltimore barely beat Cleveland last night. It took them a walk-off block field goal return for a touchdown for the win.
I think they take that momentum and roll right through Miami. I'm taking the Ravens.
I can't pick a team to win that has Matt Schaub at quarterback and Javarius Allen at running back. I just can't do it. Kamar Aiken's their number one receiver right now.
I'm going to. Hopefully he has a good game. I need him.
All right, Cincinnati at Cleveland. Who you got? Mike's taking Cincinnati. I'm taking Cincinnati. There's so much uncertainty surrounding Cleveland's quarterback situation, and I don't think it matters who starts. Cincinnati's defense played really good against the Rams.
You look back earlier this year, obviously Cincinnati was able to jump out in front early because of Tyler Eifert. His status is uncertain going into this week, but I don't think it matters. Cincinnati's a really good ball team. Let's move on to the 4 o'clock games. Kansas City. Ooh, there's 4 o'clock games this week.
It's about time.
Kansas City at Oakland.
Listen, Oakland is becoming a competitive team again. I just don't think this is their year. Kansas City's still in playoff contention, and the way they've been playing recently, you know, they're relying on guys like Spencer Ware or Sharkhandrick West to be reliable. Alex Smith's doing a better job than I thought he would this year, even though I picked them to win the division. I'm going to take Kansas City. Oakland's defense still needs a little bit more work. They're a little rough around the edges.
Yeah, I'm going to take Kansas City as well. They're probably the hottest team in the league right now other than Carolina.
Yeah, they're on like a five-game win streak.
Last five, they're on a five-game winning streak. And Andy Reid's a really good coach. So something to watch for is Justin Houston, like we said earlier with the mailbag question, but I don't see Oakland winning this one, really. Next up is the Denver Broncos at the San Diego Superchargers, who haven't really been super at all this year. They have 3 wins.
I'm going to take Denver just based on the idea that they have the best defense in the league right now.
Statistically true.
Second best defense, because I think Carolina's got a phenomenal defense.
Yeah, both defenses are really good. I'm going to take Denver as well. San Diego just doesn't do it for me. Next up is the Eagles.
Real quick, how San Diego hasn't figured out to run the ball with Melvin Gordon is beyond me. Unless it's just the idea that no Wisconsin running back will ever be a good running back in the NFL. Melvin Gordon has the size, speed, and tools that every pro running back in the NFL should have, yet they haven't found a way to use them.
Maybe the system is strictly for college.
Maybe San Diego's system is strictly for Phillip Rivers to throw 60 passes a game.
Maybe.
All right, go to the next
Philly
game.
At New England. Do you want to take Philly in this one?
No.
Okay.
Me either. I'm not that dumb.
Well, I don't know. You like Philly, so.
There's not much analysis behind this.
No.
New England's the second best team in the league right now. That's it.
And Philly might be the second worst.
All right.
Next to San Fran. Carolina at New Orleans. I mean,
New Orleans squeaked one out.
Yeah?
No, I'm not picking them. I'm saying last week they did.
Okay.
I'm taking Carolina. They're going to be undefeated. New Orleans defense is terrible. Drew Brees did not do anything to help win that game for them. You're taking New Orleans.
I'm going to take New Orleans.
Good for you, man.
You just said Carolina was going to go undefeated.
Oh, no, I said they're going to be undefeated after this game.
Oh, I don't think so.
I guess that's what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to take them to try and catch up a game.
All right. You're losing one there.
Drew Brees at home. Maybe he pulls one out. Maybe. Right. We'll see. 4 o'clock. It's going to be one of the better games at 4 o'clock.
I think this game might be the dumpster fire. No, because Roethlisberger said he was going to play. Who's San Fran playing?
San Fran's playing Chicago.
That might be the dumpster fire.
No. This is a bad game right here.
No, I think that's
this is a bad game right here.
All right, whatever. Indianapolis at Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger plays. I think D'Angelo Williams has a big game in this one. I'll take Pittsburgh. I also think that Antonio Brown finally gets back on track because they're going to move him around a little bit. He's not going to get Vontae Davis the whole game.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh as well. I mean, Hasselbeck hasn't lost as a starter this year.
But you can't
You can't pick Indy. You can't do it.
You can, but I'm not going to. This week, I think, is the week where Houston takes over in a division that they should have locked up if they still had Arian Foster.
Yeah.
But, you know. I like
the
Pittsburgh.
Sunday. That was the Sunday night game?
That was the Sunday night game. Indy at Pittsburgh.
And the Monday night game's awful, too. I wish they flexed Monday night games.
Yeah, me too, because I don't want to watch Dallas.
Dallas at Washington.
Like, Washington over the last few weeks hasn't been a bad team to watch.
People thought last night would be the worst game of the year. This might be the worst Monday night game of the year.
It might be.
I'm going to take Dallas. I know you're going to take Washington.
Yeah, I'm going to take Washington.
I'm not sold on Washington yet.
I might go back on, you know, Dallas not winning another game this year.
All right, that's going to do it for our Week 13 picks. Let's fly through Fantasy Golden Garbage. Just to recap last week, Mike had, for his gold, Derek Carr, 31 points, Nate Washington, 7 points, Jonathan Stewart, 9 points, Jimmy Graham, 11 points. So the only good pick he had there really was Derek Carr. I had Drew Brees, 9 points, Martavis Bryant, 19 points, T.J. Yeldon, 11, and Delanie Walker, 15, so Brian and Walker, big picks for me. Mike's fantasy garbage team could have been a championship team. Blake Bortles, 23. Brandon Marshall, 34. Who's that? D'Angelo Williams, 23. Martellus Bennett did not play. So if you would have started those guys, you probably would have won some FanDuel or DraftKings. My garbage picks, Ryan Tannehill, 18. Not terrible. Dez, 4 points, McFadden, 9, and Jimmy Graham, 11. Jimmy Graham did exit the game with the torn patellar tendon. That brings us to the Week 13 Golden Garbage Picks. I will start by saying Derek Carr has a big game this week against the Chiefs, but they still lose. The secondary in Kansas City is still suspect, even though they're playing a little better. I think Carr moves the ball well in the air.
I'm going to take Aaron Rodgers. Thursday night, usually not a big night for quarterbacks, but I think they bounce back after a disappointing loss last Thursday night on Thanksgiving.
sorry. Jesus.
I'll take Jarvis Landry as my wide receiver gold, playing against Baltimore. Baltimore's pass defense has been poor all year.
I'm going to take Brandon Marshall against the Giants. The Giants' defense is god terrible, awful. There's nothing else I can really say about that. My fantasy gold running back is David Johnson because Chris Johnson's out for a substantial amount of time and Andre Ellington might not play this week, so he's going to get a chunk of carries this week. He's a great value in daily fantasy, so keep an eye out on that. And then my gold tight end is Travis Kelce going against the Oakland Raiders, who are just awful against tight ends.
I'm going to take Forte as my running back. Hopefully he gets a lot of carries and they, you know, kind of shy away from Langford. But against San Fran, he should have a big game. And my tight end's going to be Kyle Rudolph from the Vikings going against Seattle. Seattle, from time to time this year, has been having difficulties covering tight ends, and Rudolph's only big games have been at home.
All right, so let's go to garbage. My garbage at quarterback is Phillip Rivers. He's playing Denver. That's pretty much it.
I'm going to take Matthew Stafford. I don't like Detroit in this game one bit. I don't care how well they played last week against Philly. Philly's a bad team.
All right, my garbage at receiver is Dez Bryant. He's playing without Romo. We saw how much of a difference that made for him this week when Romo went out. And they're playing Washington, who has been decent against receivers this week, or this year.
All right, I'm going to go with Mike Evans, Tampa Bay.
The Norman effect.
Yeah, no.
No.
No, Atlanta. No. They're playing Atlanta. But
the Trufant effect.
Yeah, Atlanta's been solid this year defensively. Evans has just been kind of disappointing most of the year.
Yeah, if he doesn't have a huge game, then he's not doing anything at all.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw one out into the wind and hope it flies away.
My garbage at running back is Mark Ingram, who is going against the Carolina Panthers. They have a really good run defense. I think that totally affects everything. And Mike, yours is DeMarco Murray?
Yeah, DeMarco Murray going against New England. New England's been one of those teams that statistically is good against running backs fantasy-wise because they jump out to early leads or because teams are playing from behind.
My garbage tight end is Jordan Reed going against Dallas. Dallas has been decent against tight ends, but Reed has been a little banged up as of recent. He did have a good game this week, but I do think that there could be a little decline in his stats.
I'm going to take Antonio Gates just because they're playing Denver. He could see a little bit of Aqib Talib.
Yep. All right, so while we're talking about fantasy, we're also going to recap our weekly DraftKings tournament where Freddie Serm finished number one. He took the grand prize. If you are a fan of the show, please email ontheclockpodcast@gmail.com, and we will send you your T-shirt. So reach out. We'll hook you up. More importantly, second place finisher, Iron Mike's girlfriend, Danielle.
Yeah, she was really excited going into the Monday night game. She had first place. Then she kind of looked at everybody else's numbers, and she didn't think she was going to place at all, and she held on to it.
Also, Terry Kennedy finished in fourth overall. Good friend of Mike's. Good friend of ours, Scheller, finished in seventh. Party with Mark G in 10th. I finished in 14th. Anybody else notable? That's pretty much top 15. Iron Mike, 45th overall. How do you feel right now?
Indifferent.
You feel happy it's only a dollar?
Not only that, I mean, I kind of threw it together last minute Sunday morning at work.
Yeah, all right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode of the You're on the Clock podcast. Make sure
I'm going to bounce back and win this week.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook. We will have the links posted for the DraftKings contest. And also, you can it's a good way to contact us if you have any questions that you want read on the show. That's On the Clock podcast on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. My Twitter is _Matt_Geiger. Iron Mike's Twitter is, give it to him,
@Iron_Mike_NJ.
And then if you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, it is, I'm looking for it.
Can't believe you don't know this.
It's @YouAreOnTheClock. All right. And then, like we said, if you want to email us, it is ontheclockpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys, and make sure that you go to iTunes or Stitcher, you leave a 5-star rating, you subscribe to us, tell your friends about it. We appreciate everything that you guys do for us by tuning in and listening, but we want to do way more, and that starts with the word getting out about the podcast. And also, make sure you go to Lineup Media Group and check out the great podcasts that they have there. There's a bunch of new stuff out. They have the NHL podcast, they have a bunch of other sports roundtable talks, and they have a ton of other stuff, so make sure you go check them out at Lineup Media Group.
Yes, thank you, Lineup Media Group, for allowing me to, for whatever reason, continue to talk about football.
All right, that's gonna do it. Tune in next week when we debate on whether or not Black Fridays matter.
No.
You're on the Clock with Matt Geiger. Download the show and link to our social media accounts at ontheclockpodcast.com. Plus, be sure to check out the entire podcast lineup, including Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, Youth Baseball Talk, Ocho Man Behind the 8 Ball, and more.